Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified on a beautiful Saturday morning in Portland, Oregon. And we've got an exciting show today because we're going to have our guest, Terry Dent, going to be on the line with us. But first of all, I want to welcome my co-host, Carl Jepson, with the Warren Allen Law
Good
Firm.
Good morning, Chuck. Morning, nice
Carl,
to be here.
And Kevin Stange with the Baker Colson CPA Firm.
Hello.
And coming on air is going to be Harry Dent. And I do want to introduce Harry Dent. If you want to sign up for Harry Dent's free newsletter, Economy and Markets, and it's a daily newsletter, you can do that at www.harrydent.com. You can also do it on our website at pfgwm.com. And Harry's latest book, The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper in the Great Deflation of 2014-19, that's really going to be the subject of our discussion today because if you call in, you want to call in or you call in the show, I'll give you a free copy of the book. And Harry, are you on the line with us, sir?
Yes, Chuck.
Great. Harry, how's the weather in Tampa?
It's nice, you know, a little hotter than you'd like it, but that's the price you pay for having such a great winter here.
Yeah, really. Well, listen, I do want to also... I also want to pitch the fact that you're going to have an economic irrational economic summit October 16th to 18th in Miami, Florida. And I can just speak for myself that I was with one last year, and this is a great 3 days. You always have a great platform of guest speakers that do a great job.
Yeah, we're having David Stockman be the keynote, and I really like him. I read 738 pages of his book in 5 days. That's how much I liked it. So, I mean, he's going to be great.
Well, those shows are always great. And I was talking to your office yesterday, and I understand that next year in October you're coming to Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yes, but yeah. I love the Northwest, so I was very pleased. chose a place up there. So,
I will just say this: if you invest any of your own money. And you want to have a 3 days of going and getting some of the latest cutting-edge economic facts about what's going on in the economy, you cannot miss that next year in the Northwest. All these people who are listening to us on the Northwest Network, that is a great opportunity to go to Vancouver, B.C., which is not that long a trip, and to see you and Rodney and whoever you end up having as guest speakers.
Yeah, no, it is a great 3 days.
Well, listen, I've been watching your, I've been reading your of course your change of your newsletter, Economy and Markets daily, and I noticed in there's a couple of things about things that you think this thing's coming fairly quickly, from what you're saying, that this market correction you think could very easily happen this year.
Yeah, I mean, the market's gotten really bubbly lately. And I mean, this last week was such a perfect example. You have all this bad news, and the market just goes down for a day and comes roaring back. This is a manic market. I often call it market on crack. You got Janet Yellen out there saying, well, I hope people don't speculate because we're holding rates down to zero. When you push short-term rates down to zero, all of Wall Street, hedge funds, investment banks, brokerage firms, are going to invest at 30 to 50 times leverage and turn this into a casino. So what we have is a bubble that started to burst in 2007, 2008, And basically, the Federal Reserve and central banks around the world have just recreated the bubble to the benefit of the top 1%, to saving the banks. It's not helping Homer Simpson. It's not helping the economy that much. We have massive stimulus, and we can only grow at 2%, and we've already fallen back here. This is artificial, and the government's just preventing us from making the sorts of restructuring of debt, letting these financial bubbles burst and come back down to reality, including housing, so the next generation can afford to live and invest again. I mean, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen, and everybody's on CNBC saying, oh, this is not a bubble because of this. I'm telling you, Chuck, and you know what, I have studied bubbles. Anybody studied more than me, I'd be happy to hire them or kiss their, you know what, in public. This is a bubble. And worse than that, it's totally artificial. And, you know, the tech bubble in the 90s, which we forecast ahead of everybody, was the natural confluence of the strongest time of baby boom spending we could project and the strongest acceleration of internet and computer and wireless technologies in the economy, just like the kind of like the roaring 20s. But this is not. This is totally artificial. And, yes, it's getting bubbly. The debt and the margin debt, and I mean, investors are absolutely convinced the market cannot go down, and that's when you're nearing the end. When the market is convinced everybody it can't go down, it's got everybody on the ship, that's when it bursts. I think we're going to peak some here where between now and in the next few months, and we're going to see a big first crash into maybe March or so of next year, and then there'll be a series of crashes after that. I've been saying on in the media that, you know, we got this giant megaphone pattern where each bubble has taken us to new highs, but each crash in between has taken us to new lows. This projects we're going to peak a little over 17,000 here on the Dow, and the next major stop a few years from now is 6,000 or a little bit lower, and ultimately we've got to erase this bubble, which probably takes us to 3,000 to 4,000. So this is not a market that's going to go back to new highs next time. This is not a correction to sit through. You know, you have to protect your gains and not look a gift horse in the mouth. The Fed has created, you know, unwarranted and artificial gains back in the markets for investors, and you should start taking your money and run. I'd say every time the market rallies, sell some stocks.
Well, you know, Harry, I've been telling people consistently that I think you've got to put stop losses on your stocks or you got to be getting out of them at this point in time. But the thing I tell everybody, what I think you're probably one of the most misunderstood and misquoted economists there is in the world.
Because I agree with you on that.
Because one of the things that everybody misses, they always say Harry Dent's doom and gloom. Harry Dent is, you know, the world's coming to an end. That's not at all what Harry Dent's about. What Harry Dent's about is it's a great opportunity coming. You just got to see the movie. You got to know it's coming.
And also,
if you know it's coming,
I was the most bullish economist since I developed my demographic and technology cycle tools back in the late 80s, and they're very simple, but they're very breakthrough. I was the most bullish person. I was saying these baby boomers are going to drive the economy and stock markets to levels nobody thinks. It's going to go into at least 2007 before it peaks, and that's exactly where it peaked. And then we're going to have a downturn. So what I am is independent. When things are bullish, I'm bullish, and we're in a bubble boom. So I was super bullish. Now, after such a bubble, anybody who studied history and isn't bearish at this point, it doesn't have a clue of what they're talking about. History's crystal clear. Bubbles always burst. The greater the bubble, the greater the burst. And we've got the greatest global bubble and the most distributed across real estate, stocks, commodities, gold, silver, everything. This is the greatest bubble in modern history, and there's only one way it can end, and that's badly. So yes, it's a huge opportunity. Because as you know, Chuck, or anybody studies the market, markets, even when they bubble up, when they correct twice as fast. So you make enormous gains by just getting out of the way and rebuying like Joseph Kennedy did in the early 30s at, you know, 20 cents, 30 cents on the dollar. And these sort of bubble crashes typically throughout history are 70 to 90%. If you're expecting any less than that, then you don't understand bubbles. You don't understand history. 80% is typical. And the Japanese bubble burst already saw real estate go down 60% and never bounce, and have seen stocks go down 82% at worst and have only bounced a little bit and are falling back. So this is just what you need to expect in what we call the winter season, once in a lifetime, when major debt and financial bubbles burst and deleverage. It has to happen. Winter follows the fall bubble boom season. I've studied these cycles throughout history. They repeat in the same sequence every time, and this is where we are. We're going into winter. Governments are trying to fight it. They will not win this battle, because what I show in the demographic cliff, more clearly than any book I've written thus far, is that we're just going to see more and more baby boom peaks in more and more countries, and it's going to get deeper in the U.S. So if governments think it's been hard to get the economy going with unprecedented stimulus, they ain't seen nothing yet. The next 6 years is going to see Germany go off the cliff like a Stuka, worse than Japan did in the 90s. And I was the only person I know of in the world in the late 80s that said Japan is going down. Nobody thought Japan was going down. And I also said at the same time, the U.S. and Europe were going to have the greatest boom in history. If there's anybody that predicted those two things in the late 80s, then I'd like to meet them.
Well, you know, I was watching some of your latest updates on your website the other day, and there was a comment made on there about the fact that there are still 17% of the homes in America are underwater.
And, yeah, I think it was like 27% or even higher than that at the peak.
Yeah, 30, I think. I think got as high as 30, but still 17%. And one of the fake things about right now, and then you hear they always keep revising the home sales, and they revised it down again. But one of the concerns I have in the whole economy is we had a GDP that actually went down 2.9%.
Yeah, in the first quarter, yeah. And you blame it on weather, which it was partial, but hey, even if we grow 3% or 4%, and that's the highs I've ever seen anybody forecast for the second quarter, we're still going to average near zero first half of this year. So you can't blame that on weather. Unless we get 6% in the second quarter, then you can't say, oh, it was just weather.
Well, the other concern I have is that the jobs that we're bringing back are way under pay from the jobs we had before.
Yeah, I was just in Australia lecturing. I've been there twice this year, and the same thing there. They've got a stronger economy, stronger immigration and demographics, far less debt, but they got a huge real estate bubble there. They're hugely dependent on commodity prices in China, and they're having the same thing, that the jobs they're creating are slowing, and they're lower quality jobs and they're more part-time. So this is happening everywhere. You can imagine in Europe where youth unemployment in places like Spain and Portugal and Greece is over 50%.
I'm really surprised they're not having riots and chaos.
I am too. I think they're putting drugs in the water over there or something. I don't understand it either, but you know, the thing is, you know, I love Southern Europe like most people because it's such a relaxed place. The work ethic isn't very high, and I think people there are just kind of more resigned. I think you would have riots here if you had that sort of unemployment, and certainly in China. I'm surprised too. But it's, to me, we've been saying this for a long time. I mean, you know, people have life cycles, and that's what we measure, when they spend money. And I mean cradle to grave down to potato chips. Well, countries have life cycles. And Europe and Japan are kind of the aging societies of the world. And frankly, Taiwan and South Korea are going to follow Japan in that region. These are the fastest aging countries. And as you get these aging countries, or especially in Southern Europe, when you get countries that have been wealthy for centuries, basically they basically slowly get old. And so you know, we're never going to see major innovations from Europe again, and you're never going to see them being on the leading edge. And people in Europe are happy to work part time. You know, they don't have the aspirations people have here, and in up and coming countries like China or India.
Well, to our listeners out there, if you have a question for Harry, 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. And, you know, Harry, as you mentioned earlier, no one's studied demographics more than you have. And as you've pointed out, as the boomers go, so goes the money. What would you say would be a good, some good sectors to position yourself in the coming years as the boomers age? You know, whether you're an astute investor or maybe a young person aspiring to a career, you know, I think someone could use this information to still be profitable in the coming years.
Yeah, no question about it. But the caveat is, when you have a stock crash, everything goes down. Some things go down more than others, you know, the higher beta or the more volatile sectors, you know, that sort of stuff. But yes, there are clear sectors that the baby boomers are going to continue to spend more money on. Travel and leisure is one of them. Long-range travel overseas peaks at age 60, which is still several years from now, and then cruise ships peaks the latest at age 70. That's when people say, gosh, travel's too difficult, but man, put me on a cruise ship, stuff me with food and booze, and I'm happy, and that's what they do. Healthcare, health and wellness, anti-aging, pharmaceuticals, vitamins, lawn and garden care, landscaping, financial planning, and life insurance. So that's just an example of many. RVs. I tell you, if I was a car dealer, I'd sell my car dealership and I'd turn around and buy an RV dealership. Almost all the recreational vehicles and motorhomes are bought between age 53 and 60, and that's exactly where the baby boom's heading in the next 7-8 years, while auto sales plummet after age 53, which is this year. So auto sales are doing well, no surprise to us, but auto's not the place to be as an investor or for a profession. Healthcare, travel and leisure, these sort of things are. And then, of course, the millennial generation, they're not as big as the baby boom, but they're still very substantial. They're going to need, you know, child care. They're going to need affordable starter homes when this crisis blows over. But again, we're telling people, before you invest in these favored sectors, you've got to let the next stock crash play out. I mean, we had a stock crash 2000, 2002, 2008 and 9. I'm expecting one from later this year, well into 2016, maybe early 2017. Once you get a major crash, then you can buy those sectors. And once you get a major crash, you can buy the best emerging countries that are not subject to the falling commodity cycle we've been predicting, which will last many more years. Countries like India, Mexico, Turkey, Southeast Asia. So there's a lot of places we recommend investing, but not now. I mean, India is great. New progressive government, about the best demographics in the world, plenty of urbanization potential, which is where the real leverage is, but they've got their stock market's done so well that it's overvalued and probably going to crash. But boy, once it crashes, I'd love to buy India. I'd love to buy medical devices, healthcare related things.
Yeah, you know, my niece just graduated from nursing school or something along those lines, and boy, for the foreseeable future, I think that's just a great profession.
Yeah. It is a great profession. I tell people who are in, you know, like building and construction, get into nursing homes and assisted living facilities and hospitals. We've got as many homes in most places as we're going to need for a long time. Apartments are the best place right now, but that's getting overdone. But, you know, the healthcare-related stuff, especially nursing homes and assisted living, there's never enough of them anyway. And the baby boomers from 2017 forward are going to enter the biggest wave in that sector ever. So that sector is particularly attractive ahead.
You know, that's very interesting because so many of my clients are, you know, whether they like to think about it or not, you know, they're headed that way. I guess we all are to a certain extent, but I see it, you know, I have a lot of fairly elderly clients and some of them, you know, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're looking into their options. They're sometimes going and buying essentially a pre-contract to get into the care facility. Yep. That has stages and, you know, so they can start out in independent living and work their way up to assisted care. And then if necessary, go to an on-site, you know, regular high intensive care kind of type.
That's exactly what my mother's doing. She's living right outside a nursing home assisted living center. She's in a private home, part of their thing, and she can transition into more care when she needs to. It's the ideal thing. And most people do want to stay at home as long as possible. So anybody who's catering to home care for the elderly, I mean, that's anything in that sector. I just was doing a mastermind with Australian business people, and a guy had this new system for measuring out and systematizing pharmaceuticals and pills and stuff, and detecting when somebody's overtaking. And I'm like, man, you are going to make a fortune.
Well, that's for
sure. I mean, couldn't be in a better business.
That's a lot better than those little plastic boxes with all the holes in it.
You know? Yeah. He's got a much better system. He can sell it through drug pharmacies and have a centralized delivery system and just basically make pharmacies more profitable while he makes money. It's a win. I mean, I look at business like that and say, hey, who cares about the downturn? If you're in that business, you're going to do well regardless. And if you're in that profession, there's... We always say follow the baby boom when you can as an investor or as a profession because, again, the millennial generation is substantial, much larger than in Europe and Japan, but it is still nowhere near the wave of buying as the baby boomers. So as they move out of houses and furniture and cars and their kids' education and stuff like that, they're going to shift predictably into these sectors and we look at hundreds. I mean, we can tell you, you know, when people buy the most potato chips, age 42. I mean, camping equipment, age 46. I mean, I could go on and on. We know cradle to grave when people spend money on things, so we know which sectors are going to boom next. And it's amazing to me that after we've been doing this for 30 years, predicting the economy with broad demographics and spending, broad demographics and inflation, and in sectors, economists are still clueless about it.
Yeah, I am totally amazed how often I hear guys on the business networks and they never discuss demographics at all. There's no discussion in it.
The only thing they do is they do know that there's going to be fewer young workers to support more retiring older workers. That's the only place they look at it. Most of the time, I've had people, I get on programs and they just say, I'm sorry, Harry, we just don't buy this. Demographics doesn't matter. I mean, and I'm like, do you know the difference between a 19-year-old and a 46-year-old and a 74-year-old? It is massive for economic spending, for house buying, for borrowing from banks and leverage. I mean, it is. Anybody that says that just doesn't understand what they're talking about. And I'm, frankly, sick of economists. They're so uninnovative. We've been proving this stuff for 30 years, doing this research for 30 years, and they ignore it on purpose because they weren't trained in it and they don't want it to be true. It's very sad because I give talks, as you know, just like this conference we're doing, and people are just like, oh, my gosh, I can understand the economy. It's people like me raising kids, buying cars and houses, borrowing from banks, getting my kids in school. This is the things new generations doing this. Shoot, we can understand the economy. We can understand that young people are inflationary. They cost everything and produce nothing. People get that in a minute. Older people downsize everything and save more than spend. They're deflationary. We can explain the economy totally in terms of people and don't have to look at all these complex government policies, which basically only are cosmetic anyway.
Yeah, to me it's very logical how we spend and how we put our money into the economy and at what age we're and how much we can put in the economy is going to make the economy grow. Just seems like a natural thing.
The secret to it, it's like life insurance actuaries learned a long time ago. That was my favorite course in college. They can't predict when an individual's going to die, but they can predict when the average person's going to die down to the decimal point. I think it's like 79.6 in the U.S. It's 84.1 in Japan, the oldest. That's what we do. We can't predict individual consumers, but we can predict large, you know, when a generation or when large average consumers are going to do everything. So all these things shouldn't be surprised. It shouldn't be a surprise when Germany suddenly starts failing in the next few years like Japan in the 90s. It shouldn't be a surprise when car sales drop off as dramatic or more than homes did several years ago. These things are already baked in the cake.
You know, Harry, one of the concerns I have, and looking at the economy and the demographics of the thing, is as America gets older, and you talk about insurance companies, and one of the concerns I have is many of the insurance companies, is something like 70% of the commercial buildings are owned by insurance companies. So they're heavy in mortgage and real estate mortgage, and they're heavy in bonds. What's going to be the effect when this crash comes to companies like insurance companies that are holding large blocks of bonds?
Well, you know, you have to look more at what they're holding. But in the Great Depression, insurance companies actually did well because they were holding high-quality long-term bonds. The ones that are holding heavy mortgages and commercial properties, that is more of a problem.
So you think the insurance companies, just like during the Great Depression, they did come through because nobody lost their money in insurance companies during the Great Depression. One of the things that people never talk about, but the fact is they had a reserve set up where they had to have dollars, and fortunately
they
were able to
have collateral, and it tends to be more in bonds. Now that again, to the extent, I mean, we have more of a real estate crash this time. We didn't have a big real estate bubble in the Roaring Twenties. We had a stock bubble and a tractor and farm bubble. And so when it burst, it really hit stocks. And bonds actually did well, except for a year or so when they spiked temporarily. Bonds were the best place to be, so insurance companies did well. So you have to look at your insurance company and see where they've got their money invested. If they're in high-quality corporate and government bonds, then they'll do fine. If they're in a bunch of tricky mortgage securities and if they own a bunch of large commercial buildings, that is very exposed. Commercial real estate got hit. One of the things we do, Chuck, is, you know, we look at Japan. They've already been through all this. Their baby boom peaked way ahead of Europe and the United States. Their stock bubble, their real estate bubble burst way ahead of ours. And, you know, you can track what happens. Commercial real estate and stocks were the hardest hit sectors. But in real estate, commercial real estate got hit 80% in Japan.
Yeah, and they've still not recovered.
Still never. They bounced a little bit for a few years, and they're back down at their lows. Residential real estate, 23 years after the peak in 1991 in real estate, which is exactly when their demographics peaked for buying real estate, it's still down 60%, and commercial still down 80%. People here and around the world, less here now, but I go around the world. I go to Australia, I go to China, I go to, you know, people think real estate can't go down. And I say, well, look at Japan. It was one of the biggest bubbles in the world, and it's down not just for a few years, it's down 23 years later because now the next young generation comes along to start buying, and since homes and offices last forever, there's more old people dying becoming sellers than young people buying. So that's why I tell people, you know, real estate developers, we're not going to need many homes for the coming decades as baby boomers die as fast as young people buy. We're going to need nursing homes, assisted living facilities, hospitals, urgent care centers. That's the type of real estate we're going to need just in the healthcare sector. And there's one more round of vacation home buying, but that's just about 10% of households that buy vacation homes.
Well, Harry, you know, one of the things that is interesting to me about this, the looming commercial real estate crunch, is, you know, a lot of that commercial real estate is in the heart of big cities. And I'm wondering, you know, with the changing in demographics, you know, you got a lot of older people, many of whom, you know, they don't want to ride, you know, mass transit. They don't want to drive their cars to the city. You know, they don't want to go do that. They want to, you know, be close to where they are. How does that affect the, you know, maybe the viability of the concept of a centralized city? Especially when technology allows us to essentially do business remotely from wherever.
Yeah, the real loser here is the suburbs, because older people don't want to be in the suburbs. They either can move farther out to a more peaceful, affordable place where they can live in a kind of a lifestyle, a retirement, active retirement community with other people like them, or another substantial block of them wants to move back into the cities where they're closer to healthcare, closer to theater and restaurants and stuff. You see both of those things happening. Baby boomers are going to tend to downsize or keep the same size home. They're not going to keep buying trade-up homes. And they're going to tend to be migrating out of the suburbs, either into the cities or farther out. But I think the bigger trend is, especially in a time where things are going to become more unaffordable and the economy is going to be worse, I think the bulk of them are going to continue to say, no, I'm going to move farther out. I'm going to live on some nice little lake or golf course community close enough to still get in the city when I have to, close enough to still see my grandkids, but where it's more affordable, more peaceful, because cities are incredibly expensive, especially coastal cities. I mean, New York's gone nuts. London's gone nuts. San Francisco's gone nuts. You know, unless you're in the center of the country, urban living is extremely unaffordable. That's why these prices got to come down.
You know, one of the concerns I have, and I have discussed this with you before, but we actually negotiated a reduced rent on our building that we rent because I went around and did a survey of office space available in my area, and there's a ton of it, and there's a ton of empty buildings. And as you drive around, I mean, even though we've had somewhat of an upswing in real estate out here in the Northwest, our commercial side of it and our small business side of it, they can say all they want, but when you drive around and you see the strip malls are you could say half full or half empty, but they're half, and some of them are more than half empty. And you just drive around, and that kind of gives you an uneasy feeling when you're driving through the business areas that there's nobody in these little business shops.
Well, see, that's the thing people don't get. People are like, how's the government printing so much money and yet inflation is 1% or 0% or 2% at most? And it's because everybody overexpanded, consumers, businesses. Consumers overborrowed, bought a bigger house than they could afford long term. Businesses overexpanded, office, industrial space, warehouse, everything, retail. So that's why, I mean, you know, the Fed's trying to get banks to lend money, but banks aren't lending money. People overexpanded, and there is excess capacity, and that puts downward pressure on prices. And what the banks and financial institutions are doing instead is investing the money on leverage and creating a bubble. So we're getting inflation in financial asset prices, not in consumer prices. That's why investors have to watch out. This is a bubble, and it's going to burst. I am 99% convinced of that, really closer to 100%, because I've studied bubbles. But the government has never supported a bubble this globally and this strongly with just literally printing money out of thin air. They didn't do that in the 30s. They lowered interest rates. They built some bridges and dams and stuff. They didn't just throw trillions of dollars in the economy like they're doing today to offset the deflation and the debt deleveraging. But this bubble's going to burst, and that's where people have to worry. It's the investors who are in especially expensive real estate and in the stock market. They're going to get clobbered, and the next crash is going to be bigger in real estate, and it's going to be bigger in stocks.
You know, I got to ask you, because it's kind of had a resurgence. We talked about this once before, but bitcoins, and to my astonishment, bitcoins has kind of gotten some new life and legs in it, because some companies have come out and said they'll do trades on bitcoins.
Yeah, Rodney, my partner, focuses on that more. I tell you one thing, Chuck, for sure, and this is something when I get time, it's not the urgent thing now, but I'm going to figure a way to solve this international exchange thing. I mean, currency's going up and down. I go to Australia, one time it's 45 cents in the dollar. I go another time it's $1.08. I go another time it's 68 cents. This is madness. Companies suddenly become competitive or not competitive just because trade imbalances or some government's printing more money than another, or artificial stuff. Somebody's got to figure a way, something like bitcoins, a kind of a universal currency that we can trade in, at least, especially internationally, so that we don't have these big swings in rates. And government shouldn't be able, like Japan today, say, well, we're just going to print three times as much money as the U.S. and Europe, and we're going to drive down our currency so we can sell more goods. That's cheating. It's plain old cheating, and it shouldn't be allowed. So our international system of exchange and currencies is just an absolute mess.
Well, what amazes me is when I hear people say that the government printing money and filtering this money is not going to hurt us at all. It's going to save us.
Yeah, that's you're right. It's the stupidest thing. I mean, that'd be like saying, you can create money out of thin air, and that's good. I'm like, hey, if stimulus doesn't hurt us, then why pump $3 or $4 trillion? Why not borrow? Why not create $17 trillion and pay off the government debt? Why not create another $10 trillion and pay off everybody's mortgage? I mean, this is insanity. Getting something for nothing is always stupid and never, ever, ever works. If you invest in technology and things that make us more productive, that's how you make gains. As people get older and gain more knowledge and skills in a generation, that's how you get real gains. You don't get anything real by printing money out of thin air. It is a financial drug. It's exactly like taking more and more of a drug not to come down off of a bubble or a high, and it always, always, always ends badly. And the way this is going to end, it's not going to be inflation, or hyperinflation, it's going to be bigger financial bubbles in stocks and commodities, and especially in real estate, which is highly leveraged, bursting and destroying wealth so fast that the affluent people that are still spending money, and they're the only ones still spending money, they're going to pull back, and we're going to have a worldwide depression, and China is going to be the biggest to blow because they have the biggest real estate bubble in modern history ever.
Well, Harry, one other factor that I thought was very interesting in some of your information I looked at this past week, and one of the real falsehoods a lot of people are getting, and I run into it all the time with investors, where they're stockpiling gold. They're having all this gold, and they think the governments are going to collapse, and gold is going to be the currency.
And money printing is going to cause runaway inflation.
Yep, absolutely.
And they're going to be dead wrong.
Yeah.
And they already have been. And we've been warning this for years. Nobody gets it. Well, they get it now. What happened last year was the U.S., in late 2012, early 2013, the U.S. stepped up QE3 and QE3 forever. And then on top of that, Japan tripled down. So we had the biggest surge in stimulus yet. And guess what? Inflation dropped from 2-point-some percent down to 1%. That's when the markets got that money printing isn't going to cause inflation so much. What it's really doing is trying to cover over and prevent deflation. We would have already had a depression, a deflationary trend, if governments hadn't printed so much money. So deflation is the underlying trend, and when this thing blows, gold is going to collapse, and the U.S. dollar is going to go up, exact opposite of what the gold bugs are saying.
Well, thank you very much, because I've been saying that myself, so I appreciate you backing that up. Well, listen, Harry, we appreciate your time. I know you've got a busy day today, and we do appreciate your time visiting with us each every other month, and next month we'll be talking to Rodney, and thank you very much, Harry. We really appreciate it.
Okay, and remember, harrydent.com for the free daily newsletter. It's a great newsletter, as you know.
Okay, absolutely, and we will be we advertise that on our show right on the break.
Great.
And absolutely, if you want to sign up for Harry Dent's newsletter, you can do it on my website at PFGWM, or you can go to hsdent.com and sign up for it. And also, if you call in today on the show, I will give you a free copy of Harry's book. And I got to tell you, absolutely, I will say this. If you are an individual investor and you buy his book and it doesn't make you thousands of dollars over the next 5 to 7 years, you just didn't read the book. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back with Kevin Stege, the tax investigator. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call, 503-417-7626. Toll free, 800-990-0750. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group Wealth.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified, and we just got done with a rousing segment with Harry Dent. It always gives us plenty to think about and plan about and talk about. And, you know, he's kind of a historian, if you will. I mean, he studies the, you know, the trends and, you know, what's happened in the past and predicts that for the future a bit. Looking back at history, it's amazing how a lot of times it's just one event that tends to trip things, just set things off, you know, the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. And, you know, it was last month we had the 100-year anniversary. I wouldn't call it something to celebrate, but the 100-year anniversary of the assassination of the Archduke of Ferdinand and his wife. And what a fluke event that was that actually happened, but how that's changed, you know, that one event, that one day, with his driver taking the wrong turn down the wrong lane and stalling the car and given the chance for the assassination to occur, you know, the failed policies of World War One, the cleanup after that set the stage for World War Two, and you know, here we are now with countries in place from there. So I mean, how that one event changes things, and you can almost feel something like that building.
I hope you're not saying that you think maybe this plane getting shot out of the air at the Ukraine could be the same kind of. It could be. I mean, there is a lot of concern about that.
I'm talking about the bubbles bursting and the economic markets. It just seems like we're waiting for one or two things to happen before what Harry's talking about could come to fruition.
Well, unfortunately. War could do the same thing.
And it could.
Yeah.
It could.
Well, and bad economics often lead to war. You know, people get frustrated, get angry, you know, and say they can't take it any longer, and they start, you know, doing stuff, and next thing you know, it explodes all over the place. And I heard an interesting fact on or I don't know if it's a fact, but on the radio or the TV show last night, I think it was, a fellow on the news said that there were wars going on currently in 41 different countries.
And you never hear about it on the news, I mean, you're going.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure what his definition of war was, but I think it was, you know, open conflict where they're, you know, it's not just police stuff. It's you know, out and out attacks on civilians and things. And so that's a pretty remarkable thing. So
it is. It is. Well, two quick news items. Next week, actually, I won't be here. So the following week, we will finish up our segment on education credits and education planning. Deductions and some ideas that I have, depending on your tax bracket, that will help you maximize as a family unit your tax benefits for education. So, but since we're short on time today for a full segment, just two news items that may affect people a little bit. One is, and we've briefly talked about this before, but the IRS finally put it in stone and a beginning date, but the ability to do a rollover from your IRA is going to be limited to just one per year, not the trustee-to-trustee rollover, but when you take the money and you decide to put it back, you're going to be limited to just one. And it had to go to a court case because somebody said, well, it's one per year per IRAs that I have, and I have three IRAs, so I should be able to do that with all three, you know, once a year for all three. Well, they've said, no, no matter how many IRAs you have, you can do it one time per year, and that's going to begin January 1st of 2015. I also read that they're going to make permanent the ability to contribute a portion of your IRA to charity and have the favorable rules. That was a temporary thing that was put in place here during this latest round of tax negotiations, but now they've made it permanent.
And that allows you a direct...
Or they're going to make
that it. Allows you to take the money out of the IRA and give it directly to the charity.
Right.
But you get it first and then you give it to the charity, or do you have to make it a...
It goes directly to the charity.
Goes directly.
Yeah, and it's more favorable on your tax return because it doesn't factor into your gross income and those calculations.
Well, remember, for a while they were allowing you to give your RMD to the charity, mm-hmm. so you could write that off as a gift.
And this would be the same
thing. That's a very good thing because there's a lot of people who don't want to take that RMD and have it added on to their income tax, And if they have a charity, that is a great way to do it.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I should say there's still a little political wrangling over it, but it seems to be the way things are going.
Yeah, we should point out when you said about the one time you could take once a year a rollover, but again, if you're doing a trustee-to-trustee transfer, one of the things our office is very, very careful about when we transfer IRAs for clients or their 401k when they're retiring, we always do trustee transfers, not rollovers.
Yep, and that's the way to go. And you know, the devil's in the details. The same thing with a 1031 exchange, just getting ready to work through one with a client, and that's where you exchange one property for another like-kind piece of property. Boy, oh boy, if you have incidents of ownership of the proceeds anywhere in that transaction, it's null and void, and it's all taxable to you. So, again, you just want to do things right.
Yep.
Makes it easy.
Well, listen, I had an email last week on the show. We had an email. A lady called in at the end of the show, and she had a couple of questions. And so we'd like to answer those live on the air, and she asked if we could answer them live on the air. And it kind of crosses all three areas here. But the first question was, are accounts with beneficiaries included in the estate tax limit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Virtually everything. It's interesting that a lot of times people think, for example, like life insurance isn't included. Well, it is. Anything that is basically going to be transferred as a result of death, anything that the person owned or had some kind of interest in that is going to be transferred because they died, is included in the gross estate. In other words, the calculation of how much is to be considered as taxable and how much is not.
In fairness to the public here, I think a lot of people in the past who, and certainly not Carl and I when we do our estate planning seminars, but a lot of people have kind of made the estate planning thing kind of vague. And people get confused with probate and estate. And there is a world of difference. It is totally different. And that's where a lot of confusion comes. But as far as your estate, even if you have a beneficiary, it's includable in your estate for estate taxes. The other part of this is, this is right in Carl's wheelhouse here. What happens when a house is in one spouse's name and they pass away?
Ah, this depends a little bit on how they titled it. But here in Oregon, if they both took title,
it's
the house
only in one's name.
It's only in one's name. Okay. Well, here in Oregon, what happens is, depending on whether the spouse is the first spouse or not, if they're the first spouse, in other words, this is their first marriage. And one spouse dies, and the spouse who dies has title to the property, then the surviving spouse is going to be able to probate the estate, and will get that property as part of the probate estate because they are the sole heir. However, if that decedent spouse had children by a prior marriage, then half of the proceeds or half of the estate goes to the surviving spouse, and half of the proceeds go to the children of the decedent spouse. So it becomes a little complex in that regard.
And if you're in Washington,
it depends on when they acquired the house to a certain extent. For the most part, if they acquired the house during the marriage but just titled it in one spouse's name, the other one is still going to have half an interest in it because anything is presumed to be community property if it's acquired during the marriage. There are some exceptions to that, but as a general rule, that's what would be. The same kind of thing would take place, though, that unless they had done what they call a community property agreement, they would then have to go to a probate to get the house, that one half interest, over to the surviving spouse.
So, let me apply Investing Simplified to this. In other words, if you're in this kind of situation, you need to see your local attorney or somebody to get it straightened out before one of you passes away.
I agree. It makes it easier. Those title issues can be just incredibly challenging.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a simple question, Carl. I mean, what happens when the...
I do have clients that come in every now and then. They say, I come into you with a simple question and I go away with a headache. That's not my fault. I didn't do it.
I can't understand that from an attorney. Can you, Kevin?
No.
Huh?
No.
Yeah, wow. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. We've only got a little bit of time here. So if you want to give us a call and ask a question, You can call us at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. And we're going to come right back with something, and maybe Carl Jepsen's going to give us a few words of wisdom after that dissertation on a simple question. So we'll be right back to Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
All right, you're listening to Investing Simplified. If you got a question, give us a call. This is the time when it's kind of a little bit of a free-for-all. We'll answer any questions about anything. And I do want to say, if you're interested in Harry Dent's book, if you give a call to the station, I'll be happy to give you a free copy. And this past week, I did have a couple people come in that called the show the previous week, and or the previous week before that, came in and got a copy of the book. And Carl, you would appreciate this because one of the guys said that he said, "Well, I suppose I could read this in one day." According to Carl, it's real easy reading.
Oh boy!
No. He was being facetious, and he said that it's probably going to take me a little longer than that based on what Carl said. And it's not an easy read, but I'll tell you, it's got a lot of dynamite in it. And if you look at the graphs and go through it, the graphs will tell you a story. And I think you need to read those and look at them and get to understand them, because Harry's laying out a picture here for you of what's going to be coming down the road. And if you can see the movie before it happens, you can adjust accordingly. But if you don't, then of course you won't. But I highly recommend reading that that book, because I think it's very valuable, and I think it could save you a lot of money down the road. So, and also, if you do have, you can email me at askchuck@pfgwm.com. If you have a question you want read on the air, kind of like we just did, we'll be happy to do that. Some people have called in and left it with the engineer here at the station, but it's probably best if you email it, and then we can get it back to you. And also, Kevin, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they do it?
We're at bakercoulson.com. And we are located at 2414 Northeast Division out in Gresham, 503-666-5569. And we'll be glad to take your questions, your inquiries, and help you get pointed in the right direction.
Carl?
Well, Warren Allen is conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd. That's just one block north of Gleason on 122nd Avenue. And real close to I-205. We have 9 lawyers. We do a lot of things other than estate planning. We do a lot of landlord work. We do family law. We do personal injury, medical malpractice. We do just about everything there is. And we do a ton of estate planning and probate. So that's where we can be found. And it's 503-255-8795 and warrenallen.com.
Yeah, and Price Finance Group Wealth Management is located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103 in Portland, Oregon. We can be reached at 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE or on the web at pfgwm.com. And I'd highly recommend, if you're interested in your Social Security benefits or you're just interested in listening to some of our past broadcasts, they're all listed right there on the radio, on the website, and you can go on there and listen to them. So I highly recommend you doing that, particularly if you want to hear Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson, what they've said in the past. We have all those right on the website that you can listen to. So I think it's pretty valuable listening. I do want to mention, if you do have a question on Social Security, we have a really nice video on there you can look at about Social Security, because I think it's something that you really need to plan on to maximize your benefit. And under the current rules right now, there are some things you can do to get more out of Social Security than you could just by taking it out at age 62. Of course, it all depends on how long you live, and that's the one thing none of us know. That's the unknown. So anyway, we hope that you'll have a chance to take care of that and do it. Now, let's talk about something fun here, about the British Open, Kevin. We've been kind of watching that. We're listening to Harry here, and what's the uptake on the British Open right now?
I was just going to say, spoiler here. So if you're watching the replay, don't listen. But looks like Rory is running away with it. I believe he's up 6 strokes going into the final day.
Wow! So, wow!
Yeah.
I guess my hope for Phil Mickelson to have a repeat is kind of out of the question at this point.
Yeah.
I think Phil has done shot his wad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're just about out of time here. We hope that you'll listen to us next week and mark down the third Saturday every month. We either have Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson on the show. And again, if you call on the show and you want a free copy of Harry Dent's book called The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper in the Great Deflation of 2014 and 19, you can get a copy and also sign up for his free economic newsletter called Economic and Markets Daily at harrydent.com. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management.